Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we're going to dig deep into the Serie A transfer window. On Monday we talked a lot about the Premier League. Today we're going to talk much more about Serie A. We're going to go deep on Inter, Milan, Napoli transfers. For the interview segment of the podcast, we have our great friend John Solano. We'll take a deep dive on Roma, who are off to a great start to the transfer window. But before we get to that, I am joined by our great friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. And this question, I think you'll see where I'm going with it. But there's been a lot of buzz on financial fair play and what clubs have to do to meet their financial fair play parameters. So I wanted to ask you, Alex, PSG is almost certainly going to have to sell some players by the end of June to meet their parameters. So take your Chelsea hat and Chelsea jersey off just for a second and tell us in general, which Paris Saint-Germain players would intrigue you if you were working at a club looking to reinforce it?
I like the question, David, and I'm going to immediately ignore some of the bigger players like Neymar. I'm not going to, you know, let's be realistic. I'm not going to say Neymar. I'm not going to say Mbappe. I'm not going to even say Thiago Silva. And I'm actually going to leave Marco Verratti off the list as well, even though I know he's a reasonable answer there. Someone who's obviously been at PSG for a while. Maybe his value has dropped a little bit. I would certainly understand if teams want to sniff around Verratti. But the players I have for you are players that certainly, maybe based on their style or maybe based on their youth, are not big, big names yet. One would be the midfielder Adrien Rabiot. Rabiot has been at PSG for a while now, but certainly is not a stylish or flashy player, but I think could do a job for a number of teams. Is a CM, could definitely slide into many sides, and could get PSG a decent return, not astronomical, but I think that's a player that I would sniff around, see his availability, because I think he could be a solid CM in many different systems. Another one is similar position, Giovanni Lo Celso, the young Argentine who, you know, certainly is not a household name yet, but just 22 years old, really strong young player. Once again, I think if you were to acquire him now, maybe he would be worth a lot more down the line. Probably has more potential than Rabiot. The other two would be Julian Draxler, of course, the attacking mid that has played pretty well for PSG, but I would sniff around Draxler because he clearly is not their top priority on the wings or even as an attacker. They have Cavani, Mbappe, Neymar, and then maybe Draxler. I mean, they still have Di Maria, but I would sniff around Draxler. He's still just 24 years old, still has a lot to offer. So if you could get him on a good deal, I would definitely be interested in Draxler. And then the last one, David, and I'm not saying this because I'm American. If actually you know anything about me, I really don't rate a lot of the U.S.'s talent, but I would sniff around Timothy Weah, one of the top youngsters, period, in Ligue 1, but also period within the United States. Some already rate him higher than Christian Pulisic. Timothy Weah is a really bright young prospect. That's a player that if they are trying to hold on, PSG, if they're trying to hold on to a Neymar or an Mbappe or a Cavani, maybe you can get Timothy Weah from them. Once again, prospects, as you say, it's like a blank canvas. They're far from a sure thing, but 18 years old, and he's really, really promising. So those are the four I would sniff around. But David, taking a step back, would it make most sense for PSG to look to sell Neymar to Real Madrid?
Great question and segue, because I have a lot of thoughts on financial fair play, net spending, and whatnot. So I've been thinking a lot about this because in the early stages of the transfer windows, we have clubs, and PSG is one of them, and Serie A, we have Roma and Inter. Milan's going to be in an even more dire situation with this, where they have to raise funds to meet their parameters. And I think, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of confusion when deciding, you know, how much a club is spending on a transfer. Personally, when I see people comparing net spend of a clubs, yeah, that's better than comparing gross spending. So just looking at the acquisitions and not taking into account the players you sell. But that is a very simplistic and really not accurate way to measure how much clubs spend and whatnot, because what has impact on financials, books for clubs, is the profit you make on the amortized value of a player. So without getting too technical on this, the longer you have a player on your books, and say you bought him for a cheap amount of money, if you can then resell him for a fortune, that's when you make a real profit. To give you an example, what Juve did back in the day with Zidane, they acquired him from Bordeaux for a really low fee. If it was less than 10 million euro, the equivalent was lire back then, they sold him for 100 million. Because the difference between what they had spent for him and they had him on the club for a while, that allowed them to then turn around and buy players like Buffon, Nedved, and Thuram. So it's just way too simplistic to look at just net spend. So the way I'm going to tie it back to Neymar, I was talking, texting our friend Jonathan Johnson, who covers PSG so well. On Friday, we're going to find out how much money PSG has to raise by June 30th to be within compliance with financial fair play. The best guess that we have is anywhere between 70 and 80 million. So what PSG needs to do is to raise 70, 80 million, a profit on the amortized value left on a player. So let's use Neymar as an example. They spent, what was it, 250 million or something absurd like that last year. To make up that 70 or 80 million, they would have to sell him for over 300 million to another club. So that is, I mean, it's not impossible. We know in this transfer window, in previous transfer windows from last year, almost anything could happen, but that seems unlikely. To give you a good example of this, last year, Inter, the way they raised these funds is they mainly sold homegrown players for probably inflated fees. You know, if you have a club like Sampdoria, who you've done a lot of business with, they might help you out. Skriniar went to Inter for a fee, and then Inter sold some other players to Sampdoria on completely unrelated deals, and that's how they raised the money. If you have a homegrown player, you didn't spend money to acquire him in the first place, and you can make a huge profit on that. Let's look at it for Milan. Someone like Donnarumma, if they sell him for a huge fee, that is a bigger profit. As an example, if you sell Donnarumma for 50 million, that's almost 50 million in profit. If you sell Bonucci for 50 million as a profit, that's not much because they spent 40 million on him last year. So I think it's important, you know, for fans to stop maybe look at it so much net spend and adding up the transfer fees. I know it's more complicated, more time consuming. I find that bragging about net spend is just a great way to flex on Twitter and make fun of other fan bases. But in reality, it really doesn't work that way. So tying it back to PSG, it's interesting you mentioned Weah. I doubt it will be him, but you're on the right track. They might sell some younger players that they can turn a big profit on. They might sell some players they've had on the squad for a while. I think Javier Pastore is a perfect example of this. They've had him for a while. They've amortized his transfer fee. If they sell him now, they could make a big profit. And while we're on the topic of PSG, I know a lot of people have been asking me why they haven't announced the Buffon signing, and I think it also has to do with financial fair play. They want to start selling some other players, get their financial books in better shape before adding anyone else. And I also think timing-wise, PR-wise, it makes a lot of sense. Yesterday, UEFA did the ruling giving Buffon a 3-game suspension. Say you announced the Buffon signing last week, and then this ruling comes out. If you're PSG, you have to deal with everything that comes with that. If they put a little bit of distance, let the news cycle change up, there'll be more stories. When Buffon arrives, that 3-game suspension isn't going to be at the forefront. So I still think Buffon's going to be a PSG player. It's just a matter of time. So that should be announced in the next few weeks. But PSG's priority right now is going to be selling players. And there might be some great opportunities on the transfer market for another club. So with that out of the way, let's get to the great Twitter questions. We love getting these, so please keep sending them in with the CalcioLand hashtag. We take questions on transfers for all leagues, not just Serie A. We also love when you send us questions on journalism and music. We have a few to end this segment today. So, Alex, which ones are we going to go over today?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. What has been your initial impression of Roberto Mancini's Italian national team?
So I'm old, cynical. I don't get excited with young players as much as you mentioned it at the top. And I have a lot of thoughts on the Italian national team. I think all the vitriol and the hatred directed at Ventura after the failed qualification was completely justified, but it also overshadowed a lot of problems with the Italian national team. Now, I've been following the Azzurri, my first very vague memory, 82. I was very young. I barely remember that. I remember watching the 86 World Cup, the 90s. So I go way back with the Azzurri. I actually think this is, as far as talent goes, this is the weakest the Azzurri have been. Now, granted, this is an opinion. That's my opinion. But there are also, you know, some things you can look at. How many Italians start for the top four teams in the standing last season in Serie A? Really not that many. We saw some matches between Juve and Napoli where it was almost all foreign players. Inter has a little bit more Italian players than they've had in the past, but they have still a lot of foreign players. Same with Roma. The one team that we saw field a lot of Italian players was Milan, and you know, I hate to say it, in the standings it didn't really work out that well. Another point of evidence on how of an issue with talent is I read today ESPN tweeted a list of the clubs that are sending the most amount of players to the World Cup. Juve was in the top seven. And think about that for a second. Italy isn't in the World Cup, and Juve still among the clubs sending the most players to the World Cup. Sure, that speaks volumes of how good they are in the transfer market, but Juve is typically the team that gives the most players to the Italian national team. Now, granted, this summer they have targeted more Italians. They'll have Caldara, Spinazzola, and Perin, but still, there's just a lack of talent. And I'm concerned on top of that, we see three players that are among the most talented Italian players, Insigne, Immobile, and Verratti. And so far, they've really not done much for the Italian national team. I don't really say under Mancini, but in general. On the bright side, I think for Mancini, it's good that he's playing a lot of the young players. I hope he keeps doing it. And also, when the games start counting, you know, when the Euro qualifiers start, I think it's important that he keeps sticking to young players because overall the cupboard is very bare. I mean, if you compare the squad now to 2006, I mean, it's shocking. But even go back to the team that made the Euro final, I think that was 2012. That was definitely much more talent than now. And Conte in 2016, I think, did miracles with that squad. That speaks much more about his ability than the team. And finally, and I don't want to depress people anymore with the Azzurri, when I look long-term, who do I think is definitely a building block 4 years from now on the Italian national team at the next World Cup that hopefully they'll qualify for? I only just see Romagnoli and Chiesa as players I would, you know, be certain that they're going to be stars. Even Donnarumma's taken a step back. So I don't want to depress people too much. And again, I'm old and cynical, but I'm definitely very concerned with the lack of talent on the Azzurri.
All right, David, next Twitter question. How is Juve able to get Perin for such a low price?
So the theme of this podcast, you're going to hear it a lot, and even in our interview with John Solano, is finances and why clubs do deals the way they do. Now, Juve, the deal for Perin is all but official. He hasn't taken a medical yet, but that deal is going to happen. After he played for the Italian national team in Turin, he stayed there to meet with Juve. So Juve is going to complete the deal. There's various reports between 12 and 15 million, which is an amazing deal. I think Perin's 24 or 25. There was a big market for him. Roma and Napoli would have been good destinations for him. Roma was interested in. So you're like, how is Juve getting a keeper, a starting caliber keeper for such a low price? But guess what? I'm going to be very surprised if there's not more deals between Juve and Genoa the rest of the window. Don't be surprised if some young Juve players go to Genoa in separate deals. And you shouldn't look at those deals in a vacuum. You should look at them connected. It just makes much more sense for how deals are reported on clubs' financial books for that to be a straight sale. Both for Juve and Genoa, it makes more sense that if players go the other way, they'd be done as separate deals. Say you did Sturaro and $7 million as opposed to Pedin for $12 million, it would impact their books very differently. So don't be surprised at all if there's more deals between Juve and Genoa. When that happens, you can say they called it on the Calcioland podcast.
All right, David, next one. Will Inter have to sell Icardi and or Perisic to meet their FFP parameters?
Yeah, so it ties into what I said earlier. I think it's much more likely that Inter is going to sell some of their young players. Maybe someone like Pinamonti, very highly rated prospect. Maybe they sell him with a buyback potential. I just think Inter would love to keep both Icardi and Perisic. Perisic, you know, is a little bit up and down, but when he's on, he's absolutely devastating. So my guess is both of them will stay, and instead it'll be younger and minor players who are sold to raise those funds. They're off to a good start with Kondogbia and hopefully soon Nagatomo. They'll raise some of the funds, and then it'll probably be more prospects to raise the total amount.
All right, staying on Inter. David, how come Inter continued to be linked to players like Malcolm, Strootman, and Nainggolan when they couldn't even redeem Cancelo and Rafinha?
So look at it this way. Inter can't really spend before June 30th. They are going to have to sell players first, meet the financial fair play parameters, and that's why right now they weren't able to redeem Cancelo and Rafinha. And I was actually thinking about this. I think Inter should have been a little bit more shrewd when they negotiated those deals. They made the deadlines to pay these players back before the June 30th deadline. I mean, to me, it seems so obvious. I'm kind of surprised they didn't. I mean, maybe there's a reason that I'm missing. But in any event, just because they can't afford Cancelo and Rafinha now doesn't mean they won't be able to afford a bigger name after that deadline. And the other thing, too, you know, I see a lot of Inter fans, you know, complaining a little bit about the club's activity on the transfer market. Geez, I think there's no club in Serie A that's been more improved so far. They brought in De Vrij and Asamoah. Those two aren't official, but that's like the worst kept secret that they'll be joining Inter. They also brought in Lautaro Martinez, very exciting prospect. So I think, you know, in the short term, the focus is going to be on the sales, but already the start is great. Malcolm, who is a very highly rated player who was at Bordeaux, he's very eager to join the club. So let's see what happens. You know, maybe a better example compared to last season is two seasons ago when Inter in the summer towards the end of the window was actually able to spend a lot on Gabigol and João Mario. If they can do it this year, hopefully it'll be for players who deliver better results there.
I mean, Inter fans, just look at some of the teams that are interested in Malcolm. So if he comes to Inter, then well done. You're doing really well. I mean, not just are you doing better than some of the other Serie A teams, but you're doing better than some of the Premier League teams. So that'd be very impressive.
Absolutely.
All right, David, one more on Inter. Who is more likely to join Inter between Politano and Verdi?
So Verdi is almost certainly going to go to Napoli. All his deals to that club, there always seem to be delays and whatnot, but that deal looks like it'll finally happen. I could see Politano. My only reservation on Politano is Berardi is also potentially leaving, so I'm not sure if Sassuolo will sell both. While we're on the topic of Sassuolo, I'm very excited that they're hiring Benevento manager De Zerbi. I actually could see him becoming the new Di Francesco. He's a smart, offensive-minded Italian manager. I think Sassuolo is a perfect place for him. So I hope they keep at least one between Politano and Berardi. So let's see if Berardi stays. Maybe Politano will head to Inter.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Considering Milan's uncertain ownership situation, could Juve or another club go after their best young players?
So as I mentioned earlier, the way it works though, with how transfer fees are reported, you know, in a lot of ways, selling someone like Bonucci, you can't really make a big profit on. Someone like Romagnoli, and he just signed an extension, that would be much more advantageous financially for Milan. Now, of course, Romagnoli, I think, is the best young Italian center back. I think he's really a great building block for Milan, so I certainly hope they keep him. That's the expectation everyone has. But I just want people to kind of think in those terms. Younger player you've had for more years is a more valuable proposition to sell than someone like Bonucci. So if Milan gets really desperate, Romagnoli would be someone that would fetch a huge return. Donnarumma as well, especially with Pepe Reina there. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, I'm not a fan of telling people fairy tales. You know, Milan's linked to players like Depay and Morata, and maybe that can happen after this, after the UEFA ruling is done. But don't be surprised if at the beginning there are some pretty significant losses. I think Suso, with that 40 million exit clause, which is pretty reasonable, I wouldn't be surprised if he leaves at all. But let's hope for Milan's sake. I think Romagnoli is really one player that's non-negotiable. They have to absolutely keep him. And I could totally see, though, why he would be very appealing to a club like Juve or another club with deep pockets.
Mm. All right, how about this? Could Fabian Ruiz replace Jorginho at Napoli?
Yeah, so he's been heavily linked to Napoli, and so has former Roma midfielder Paredes. And look, you know, I'm pretty familiar with Paredes. I always felt he was kind of a Vine player, a little bit overrated, but Ancelotti really likes him, so that makes sense. I know Fabian Ruiz, who plays in Spain, is highly rated. I haven't seen much of him, so I don't have many thoughts on him. But what I do have a thought on is, I have to say, the biggest loser in all this has to be Diarra, because with Jorginho very likely joining Manchester City, you'd think that, you know, Napoli has the perfect replacement already on the squad. And I'm surprised that we're not, instead of hearing, okay, Diarra's going to have his chance, we hear as the potential replacements for Jorginho. So again, if I was a smart club, a young player, high upside, I'd look at Diarra. I hope Napoli come to their senses, because that's the guy I would build around instead of investing a lot and bringing in someone from the outside.
All right, next Twitter question. David, will Andre Silva leave Milan? And are Huddersfield and Wolves interested?
So that's an interesting situation. It was interesting that Andre Silva, you know, did an interview after the season saying how difficult it was for him to live in Italy. I mean, let's keep in mind, this is a very young guy who left Portugal for the first time. Playing in Serie A is not easy for anyone, but especially a young striker. But, you know, overall, it was definitely a very disappointing season for him. Now, his agent is Jorge Mendes. You know, he's got a lot of power. He could bring him to another team. I've heard there's been rumors of a potential swap of Andre Silva for Falcao with Monaco. Wolves, of course, have really strong ties to Jorge Mendes. I remember when we had Rory Smith on the podcast. He talked to us all about that. So I could see that. I know there's a lot of Milan fans that are really upset of Andre Silva potentially leaving. But maybe, again, it's just the prospect that is a blank canvas that people are putting a lot of expectations are. I think, you know, if Milan can get back what they invested and they can replace him well, it always goes back to the fact, can you bring in someone else who's better? I would consider it, but I know there's a lot of people that feel otherwise.
All right, next one. David, what's the latest on Federico Chiesa and the latest on Andrea Belotti?
Those are two players that we get asked a lot about. As of now, it seems that the consensus is they're going to stay put at their respective club for different reasons. I think Chiesa realizes he's still so young. He's made so many improvements. Maybe one more year of this with low expectations and being at the center of what Fiorentina does, but without the expectations of winning titles and a ton of media coverage, makes a lot of sense. Now, Pep Guardiola really likes him as well, so let's see if Fiorentina can hold on. Belotti, on the other hand, needs to reestablish his value, both for him and for Torino. So as it stands now, it looks like both will stay put.
All right, this is a funny one. David, is Calcio Twitter more toxic than any other league?
Well, I'd almost feel like asking you, because you have a lot of fun dealing with Chelsea and Premier League fans. Like, look, you know, I'm a big believer that every fan base has, you know, bad apples and fan bases that can be a club, a league, or whatnot. I think, you know, what happens on Twitter, it becomes so tribal. I think people just tend to follow people that have the same opinions. They get magnified, and then if someone has a different opinion, all hell breaks loose. I'm a believer that, you know, a lot of times It depends too on how the club or league is doing. I remember when Juve was doing very poorly, Juve fans on Twitter were pretty different than when Juve is doing well. Maybe same with Milan. So I think there's a lot of circumstances. I try not to generalize too much, but I think a lot of times it has to do with how a club is doing. My final thought is I've kind of learned this the hard way. You're not going to change anyone's mind on Twitter. The odds of someone saying, hey, you know, great point that you raised, you've changed my mind, are slim to none. I do that fairly often, but I'm also old. Younger people don't expect that. So I think you're just absolutely wasting your time arguing with people on Twitter.
Well said. Very well said. All right, next one. David, what advice do you have for a young journalist?
So we've had a lot of guests talking about it. We had George from The Athletic on Monday. I thought he gave really great advice on this, even Kyle Martino, who's a broadcaster. So I'm going to echo some of the things that they said. I think the most important thing is getting reps, doing something a lot. Like even our podcast, Alex, we've done so many of these. Like the first few, it was a lot of work to do a good podcast. I sound a lot better now. Same with you. You just have to do it a lot. There's a theory, the 10,000 hour theory, that if you do anything for 10,000 hours, you'll master it and become good at it. I think about the fact I've been covering the transfer window on the Marzo site for 5 years. I'm much better at it because I've done it for so long. So if you're looking to establish yourself, just do the job. Even if no one's reading your articles, even if no one's looking at your videos, just do them. You will get a lot better simply by doing them. Then ask for feedback. You know, it's never pleasant if someone gives you tips on how to improve, but definitely try to take it advice and try to improve. And the other thing, and I said it earlier, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, they follow people that have the same opinions as them, that support the same things. I think it's so important to branch out. And, you know, if there's a team that you hate, follow a lot of accounts for that team. See what they're saying. Try to engage with people who on the same topic have different opinion. I can't begin to tell you how many articles I've written that were based solely on a long exchange I had with someone on Twitter. Like I could write paragraph out of one tweet based on these conversations. So it's so important to listen to different opinions. The other thing that's really important is be original. Don't write things that everyone else is writing. If something's so obvious and five other people have written about it, you're really not bringing anything to the conversation. And I say that both if you're writing an article, if you're writing a video, if you're doing a podcast, or if you're writing a tweet, if you're Captain Obvious writing something that everyone else knows, like as an example, oh my God, it's terrible that Italy isn't in the World Cup. Yeah, great. We know that. We didn't need you to. So just try to be original. Try to be different. When I try to do an article, I always look around at what other people have written and try to find kind of a unique angle on it. So try to be original. Try to stand out. The last two things I'll say, I think it's really important to specialize. Like a lot of people make fun of me because I don't know much about other leagues. Even now, I get a lot of questions on Serie B and the teams that could be promoted. Like I wish I had the time to follow those sorts of things. Like there's not many topics that I know much about, but I try to be really, really good at them. Try to become a subject matter expert on a thing or two and just be really good. As you're getting started, write or make videos or podcasts on the things that you know, because you'll be comfortable and you'll get better. And the final advice, and this is my pet peeve, don't be the guy who always asks for people to give you retweets and share your work when you're not doing it yourself. And what I mean by that is I don't care if you're retweeting my work. Like it took me a long time and a lot of people helped me along the way retweeting my work. But if you ask me for a retweet and I go on your page and I see that you're not retweeting anyone, to me, that's kind of like hypocritical. So don't be that guy. Also important to network. Try to help people and then they'll help you. Like Jonathan Johnson is really generous with his time with me. If I have a question on PSG or Ligue 1, I can always reach out for him. But guess what? It's a two-way street and I do the same with him. So that's the advice that I have. We've had great journalists who have shared amazing tips on the podcast. So if you're looking to learn more, check out some of our older episodes.
All right. So we're just going to completely go away from football and journalism for the last question so you can clear your head, David. What is your favorite Radiohead album?
All right. So we're going to end it on music before we get to John Solano with a great interview on Roma. So for those of you that know me, you know that Radiohead's probably my favorite band. I got this question from a great follow on Twitter, a big fan of our podcast, Stephen Corsaro, who loves music just as much as I do. So first of all, a band like Radiohead, like, they are so fortunate to have two giants like Tom York and Johnny Greenwood. I feel like any band, you have just one of those two, you've already, it's like Christmas morning and you got the best gift. To have two artists like that in the same band is incredible. And that ensures that almost all their albums, and they've had a lot, are almost all masterpieces. I would say, except for Pablo Honey, their debut album, which is a fine debut album, not too many thrills, but for a debut album, that's fine. And King of Limbs, which I think is by far their weakest record, almost all of them can be considered masterpieces. Hail to the Thief is maybe a little bit long. It has 14 tracks. Maybe if it was 10 tracks, we could call it a complete masterpiece, but there's a lot of quality there. So if I had to pick a best one, I mean, the obvious answer is OK Computer. And Steve said I couldn't pick OK Computer and Kid A. Those, I think, are the pretty obvious answers. But I think The Bends is certainly on that level. I think it's one of the best, the classic alternative rock albums of the 90s. I always jokingly said that's the best album that Smashing Pumpkins never released. It's got really a 90s alternative vibe, very guitar-driven record. If you like guitars, that's a great choice. And I think of their recent ones, I think In Rainbows is absolutely fantastic, very underrated. What I really like about Radiohead records is they're not just a collection of songs, they're a true album. They put a lot of thought into the order of the songs, and they flow really well. And I think In Rainbows flows better than all of them. And I think kind of in a way it is a rainbow of the color stacking. So that's my pick. So with that out of the way, I just want to make a plea to our audience. Alex and I are going to do our best to cover the transfer window and give you 3 episodes a week. I got to tell you, it's a lot of work. I work full time on top of the Marzo site and everything else that I do, but I really believe in the project of the podcast. Alex puts in a ton of work in studio. He has to do a lot of work after each episode. I put a lot of thought into writing the outline. So if you enjoy what we do, we really need your support. We're on the verge of turning this into a completely profitable endeavor. There are some expenses that come with this. If you're the type of person that asks us, please do more episodes, please support the podcast. You can do that in very simple ways that don't cost you any money. As of now, we're not charging anything for people to listen to a podcast. So share what we do. You enjoy an episode, please tweet about it. Tell your friends. That will go a long way. The other thing too, if you're listening to us on an iPhone, it'll literally take you 2 seconds to give us a 5-star rating. In the U.S., we're about to break 200 reviews. We could do a lot more than that. So please do that. If you want to leave a rating, leave a description, review. We read them all and we really appreciate it. So we appreciate your support. The podcast has really grown. We're on the verge of taking the next step and we need your help to make that happen. So with that out of the way, let's get to the great interview with John Solano where we'll take a deep dive on Roma. So I'm very excited to be joined by one of our favorite guests, the person we've had on the most on the Calcioland podcast. Roma always delivers great storylines. So we're joined by our great friend, John Solano. You guys know him as the editor of the excellent IS Roma Press site. They have a fantastic podcast as well. You read him on Euro Fantasy Game and different sites as well, but he really specializes on Roma. I don't think anyone does it better in English. So, John, it's a real pleasure to have you back on Calcioland today.
Absolutely. Glad to be back on. Always enjoy doing this.
Awesome. So, you know, John, as I was getting ready for the interview today, it dawned on me, and we had talked about it the previous time you were on, that this is kind of uncharted territory for Roma, because usually this time of year, but before June 30th, they're always looking to sell a big-name player, maybe two, to reach financial fair play parameters. And this year, after the great run in the Champions League, that is not so much the case. The news on Roma has been much more on incoming players. So that's a pretty big change. So tell us a little bit about that, and tell us especially what you can tell our listener about the two new additions that are official. There's a third one coming shortly, but let's start with Karic and Marcano, who are already officially new Roma players.
Sure. So, yeah, as you mentioned, typically around, especially in the latter stages of June, we're trying to figure out who Roma are going to get rid of, just because generally, especially these last few seasons, they've been under the watch of financial fair play. Now, it appears, now UEFA hasn't handed down the results of the meeting that they had with Roma from a couple of months ago, but they fell just short of their break-even requirements. So if UEFA were to punish Roma, I think it would be very minor, such as a fine, maybe a restriction on their European roster. But yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, this is really uncharted territory, especially these last few years. I mean, we've seen what Roma have done the last few summers, particularly in June. We've seen Salah, Pjanic, you know, the list goes on and on. So, you know, for them to be in this position, it is certainly a little more unique than what we've seen in the previous years. I mean, this is all the result of the fantastic Champions League campaign that they had. I mean, they earned 100 million euros just from the Champions League alone. So them not having to sell a big name before the 30th of June, I think, is just massive. From a cohesion standpoint, you have longer with the manager, you have longer to prepare. But I also think it's the result, and I'm sure you could attest to this too, David, that the window being moved up before the start of the season also certainly has something to do with it. But I think we're all proponents of the window being shut before the season starts. I don't think I've heard a single person complain about it. But anyway, yeah, Roma really have gotten to work earlier this summer than in previous ones. Now, last summer, Munchie just arrived. So, you know, having him getting acclimated, I'm sure that had a lot to do with them having a bit of a not so great transfer market. But, you know, by all accounts now, I really haven't heard anybody complain as to what they've done up until this point. They got Ante Čorić, who is a highly rated young Croatian midfielder, didn't have a great season, but you know, just from what I've been told and people I've talked to who are far more well-versed in Croatian football, it seems like some politics came into play with that. But they got him for, you know, just 7 million euros, which, I mean, given what we've seen in the previous seasons under Sabatini, you know, Munchie taking a €7 million gamble on a guy like Čorić versus Sabatini, who's paying 18 million euros for a punt on a name like Gerson. I just think that's a huge difference. You know, Roma can't afford to take unnecessary risks like that. And we see what they're having to do now because of some of the mistakes that Sabatini may have made. And then they got Ivan Marcano on a free transfer, which, as we saw towards the end of the season with Roma, when they were going to three at the back, they were crying out for another central defender to go alongside Fazio Manolas. Juan Jesus was terrible in the latter stages of the season. He was actually pretty good earlier.
In the
early stages of the season, but as the season progressed, he just got worse and worse, and sort of his true colors came out, and he was really, really poor against Liverpool. We saw how bad he was in that first leg, and then towards the end of the season against Cagliari, he was terrible as well. So this was an absolutely needed move. They don't pay a transfer fee. The wages are moderate. They're not super high. They're not super low. But to get a player on a free who immediately, if they were to continue with the three at the back system, he catapults himself into that starting 11, to me, it's a fantastic move.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the other move that is about to become official, and that's Cristante. I know you, as we're recording this, you're on alert waiting for him to land in Rome. So it was interesting. It was yesterday I saw you tweet on how there's criticism on Roma signing an Italian international. You never thought it would come to this, and here we are. And I got to be honest, at first it took me a second to realize who you were talking about, and I'm like, yeah, wait a second, of course. Cristante, who's had, I think, no Italian midfielder, scored more goals this season, scored 9 goals for Atalanta, was kind of their star in the midfield. But, you know, it seems there's a lot of reservations on the price. I actually, when I look at the way the market is and his age, I think his price is just fine. You know, as usual, if he's a bust, people will complain about the price. If not, nobody will remember it. But, you know, there's the potential that maybe he's fool's gold. We've seen Gasperini make a lot of players look great. But Cristante also comes from really good stock. He was a highly rated prospect. So give me your thoughts on this transfer overall and the reaction you've seen on it so far.
Well, the reaction I have is really not in regards to the player himself. It's more in regards to the fee. But, you know, when we look at the landscape around Europe right now, if you want to see, because the total fee is going to come out to 30 million euros. I mean, if you want to see what 30 million euros gets you nowadays, I mean, this is what it is. We have to live with what the market is now.
Absolutely.
You know, we can't really compare to what it was a year or even 2 years ago. It's just different now, and we have to live with it. But all of the complaints I've been seeing really have no regards to the player or his ability. For me, I think it's a fantastic move because Roma, particularly when Sabatini was at the helm, they would get absolutely criticized and slaughtered for not taking a punt on young Italian players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the second they do it, to see all this criticism, I'm just really, really confused. I mean, they're getting a midfielder who you would think is entering the prime of his career. He's coming off his best season. He can score goals. The biggest need that Roma had was without question in the midfield. Their midfield, they're slow with their passing. I mean, they didn't have a single player average more than 60 passes per match. I mean, just to give you an idea, Jorginho of Napoli averaged like 95 passes per match. So that just shows you like where the biggest discrepancy in this team is. It's in the midfield. Cristante, he's going to come in, and to me, day one, he's a starter. He immediately catapults himself into Di Francesco's preferred 11. For me, he offers much more than Kevin Strootman. I mean, he can score goals. He's all over the pitch. Strootman, you know, those two surgeries that he had on his knee, I mean, the effects of that are just blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
The guy can't move. I tweeted out the heat maps of each of the players, and it's just a day and night comparison between the two. So I think it's a fantastic move. It's a 2-year loan with an obligation to buy, which you're the only other person on Twitter I know who loves the finance portion of this. But from an amortization standpoint, I really like the deal. Again, given where Roma were with financial fair play, I think it makes sense. This is the same thing that Atalanta did with Kessié. So, you know, for Roma to do this, I think it's a smart move. But as you mentioned, I mean, nobody's going to even think twice about this fee if he performs well. And again, I just think that where we are in the summer of 2018 with the market and the prices, I mean, this is what you're going to pay for a highly rated young player. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you mentioned already Strootman, how Cristante is probably going to take his role. Strootman has an exit clause. I think you were talking about it on his podcast. It's gone down, I think, this year. What is it, around 30, between 32 and 38 million euro, depending on where you read it. He's still a big name. I think his reputation is better than his performance. Do you have a feeling he'll probably be the odd man out, or do you think Pellegrini could also be moved? We've seen some clubs be interested in him. He also has an exit clause, but as you've said on our podcast before, he also has strong ties to the city of Rome. So what do you think, the aftermath of Cristante arriving is going to be?
Yeah, I think undoubtedly Strootman is the one who's going to be left out here. I mean, we've seen a lot of rumors of Nainggolan, and he's been saying a lot of crazy things in the media lately. And I think that's all the result of him having missed out on the World Cup and him sort of having to get a weight off his chest, so to speak. But I think it's without question. I mean, for me, what Nainggolan offers versus what Strootman offers, it's not even a comparison. I just think Nainggolan is so much stronger than Strootman. Now, had Strootman not had those injuries, I think he could have been a completely different player. I mean, the player we saw in 2013-14 in his first season at Roma was sensational. I think he could have been world-class. But the fact of the matter is his knees are shot. He does not move very well. He offers close to nothing in the final third. He does not score goals. I think it's almost a given at this point that he would leave. Now Pellegrini, as you mentioned, he does have a buyout clause, but to put it kindly, his agent is sort of an odd guy. So to see the rumor swirling right now around Pellegrini don't surprise me whatsoever. I think this is ultimately going to end up in him signing a contract renewal at higher wages and a higher buyout clause. Now, obviously, I'm purely speculating. I could be wrong, but that's just sort of the sense I get. But for me, with the arrival of Cristante, I think it's a no-brainer that Strootman has to leave, because given his age, his wages, and potentially the fee that they could garner for him, I don't think it makes much sense for him to remain.
Yeah, and it'd be nice then to have a lot of Italians in that midfield, which would also be good for the Italian national team. So let me ask you, before we talk about Alisson, which I know it's a topic a lot of our listeners are into, let's talk about two of the Ajax players that Roma has been linked to. We have Kluivert, who I think would fit in well with Čorić and Cristante. This would be, if you want, Monchi going back to getting young players with upside who then have resale value as well down the road. And then the other player Roma is linked to is one player that Alex likes a lot, and that's Ziyech, also of Ajax. So tell me what you think the situation is with them and who has the best chance of those two of arriving at Roma.
Ooh, of the two, I would say Kluivert has a better chance of arriving, just because as you can attest, I mean, with 1 year left on his contract, they're going to pay a much lower fee than what they would pay for Ziyech. But I think both of them are absolutely needed. You know, the biggest problem that Roma had, as I alluded to earlier, is the midfield. You know, they've never replaced Pjanic from when he left. They have no creative outlet in the midfield, and that's what they're absolutely longing for. And Ziyech, in my opinion, would immediately fill that void. Now, of the two, I think Ziyech is more needed than Kluivert. But another area in which Roma are really, really weak is on the left wing. Perotti, El-Shaarawy, they both had pretty underwhelming seasons, especially the former. He had some injuries, and he was not strong whatsoever. El-Shaarawy, very hot and cold. You'll see him perform world-class in one match, and then he'll go absolutely anonymous in another match. So, of the two, I would love for El-Shaarawy to stay, but I would think that Roma could probably get a decent fee from him as opposed to Perotti. But between Kluivert and Ziyech, I do think Kluivert has the best chance of arriving, just because, again, 1 year left on his contract. They've already agreed to personal terms with the player, whereas for Ziyech, now his agent was in Rome roughly 2-3 weeks ago. He was at the Juve Roma match, and without question, he met with the club. I just think the fee that Ajax are going to ask for him may be a little too much. Now, part of me thinks that, well, with the Cristante deal being a 2-year loan with obligation, maybe that opens the door to another big move. But if you had to ask me right now between the two, I think Kluivert would arrive, though I think Ziyech is needed more than Kluivert.
So we've spoken about all the incoming potential players at Roma. Now let's talk about one who could potentially leave. And I think what's interesting, it ties into what we talked about at the open of the segment. For once, Roma isn't in a position that they have to sell a player. So to me, they're in a complete position of strength. With Alisson, for those that aren't too familiar with him, I think he was by leaps and bounds the best goalkeeper in Serie A last season. Not only great shot stopper, just great at ball distribution. Just everything you'd want in a keeper in the modern game. Now, you know, Roma is in pretty good shape. I don't think any of the incoming moves they've made so far forces him to sell by any means, but he could also fetch a massive fee. So tell me what you think Allison's current situation is, and how do you think it will develop in the summer window?
Oh, I've maintained the entire time. I think he's going to leave. You know, when you have a club who bought a player for 8 million euros, if you look at his wages, I believe they're 1.5 million net per season. I mean, if they were to get an offer between 75 and 90 million euros, I just don't know how they turn that down, because yep. that could buy you 2 to 3 top class players in the market. Now, I could understand from an emotional standpoint of fans and supporters not wanting him to leave, but we have to look at this logically. The Roma are just getting out of the crosshairs of financial fair play. I mean, to have that sort of return on a player, I just think would be far too much for them to turn down. And, you know, just from Alisson's standpoint, he hasn't been bashful whatsoever about the interest. I mean, he hasn't said, no, I want to stay at Roma, especially from Madrid. He's been very open that he would love to play for that club at some point, and he's flattered by the interest. So I think all signs point to him leaving, which is okay. As you said, I agree with you. I think he was the best goalkeeper in Serie A this past season, but we saw with Chesney that Roma are able to replace goalkeepers after having gone 10 to 15 years without having one that was even remotely good. I mean, even when they won the Scudetto in 2001, I mean, Roma have never, ever, ever had a top class goalkeeper. And for them to have two of the best in the last three seasons is just baffling. So, even if they were to sell him, I would trust that they could find somebody who is more than capable of replacing Alisson. Now, maybe not to the extent that Alisson performed at this past season, but I wouldn't have any trepidations about selling him and worrying about finding a replacement. I think they're more than capable.
So interesting you mentioned Roma's keepers. I'm a little bit older than you. I remember the last great keeper that I can think of was like Franco Tancredi, and this is going back to the 80s. So there was a Tancredi before Tancredi Palmieri. This was the best goalkeeper I remember Roma having before. So you mentioned the past 2 years Roma's had best goalkeeper in Serie A. They replaced them well. Is there anyone that you think they have in mind that they'd be looking at as a potential replacement for Alisson? Because now Pedin is off the table because he's pretty much headed to Juve.
Yeah, you know, I think they're going to look at two names. I think one name that they'll like, that they've been rumored and linked with is Madit, who was really, really good at Spal. Now, he was injured quite a bit this past season, but, I mean, he's young. He's tall. He's imposing in the area. I think that's a name they'll look at. One name that I know Monchi has been looking at for a long, 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 long time is Lafont in France. And he is a youngster that Monchi, I can tell you without trepidation, has been looking at him for almost 2 years. I think those are two to keep your eye on. Now, obviously, you would want them to go for someone maybe a bit more well-established. I just don't know where in Europe you could find someone who fits that profile that wouldn't cost a huge amount, because, frankly, it would be pointless for them to sell Alisson for 90 million euros and then go out and spend, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, 60 million on a replacement. It doesn't really make much sense. So I don't know where the signs would point. I mean, in Serie A, obviously, you just mentioned Pedin. Obviously, he would have been a good name. But with him headed to Juve, at least in Italy, it's certainly slim pickings now for Monchi.
So as always, John, I can't thank you enough. Your insight on Roma is always amazing. If you enjoy John's appearances on our podcast, keep in mind he runs a fantastic site called S Roma Press. The podcast he does is fantastic, often has agents, journalists from Italy. So, John, as always, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to chatting with you more during the transfer season.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks again for having me, David.
Take care, buddy. Ciao.